Welcome to the podcast. Here we explore ambition, well-being, and impact, and we dive deep under the surface level tactics so that you can build a freedom-focused business on your terms. Hi, I'm your host, Annalise Warne, an agency CEO, business strategist, and coach, as well as a wife and homeschooling, traveling mama of four little ones. Stay tuned for conversations with inspirational business leaders, as well as practical marketing and leadership strategies that you can action right away. So, let's get into it. Our guest today is Lorraine Ball. After spending too many years in corporate America, Lorraine said goodbye to the bureaucracy, glass ceilings, and bad coffee to follow her passion to help small business owners succeed. Today, as a successful entrepreneur, author, professional speaker, and host of a weekly marketing podcast, More Than a Few Words, which, by the way, she's had for 13 years, she brings creative ideas, practical tips, and decades of real-world experience to every conversation. As the founder of The Digital Toolbox, Lorraine helps business owners use the internet to grow. And in her spare time, she loves to travel and take photos. You can see her photos at lorraineball.com. I had such a fantastic conversation with Lorraine talking about how to get traffic in different ways. We talked about the changes with ChatGPT and AI with content marketing. We talked about how to then move people to your email list and different ways that we can use our email list to sell while we sleep. I know that you are going to gain so much from this, the wisdom of Lorraine. We also talked about the agency that she had for 20 years and that she sold a couple of years ago. So lots of different areas that we dug into to provide a really kind of well-rounded conversation, and I really enjoyed it. I hope you do as well. So let's dive into my conversation with Lorraine. Lorraine, welcome to the show.
It is so nice to be here. Thank you for the invite.
I am so excited to speak with you. You have so much experience in so many areas that our listeners are, you know, excited to hear about and kind of get a fresh perspective on. So before we dive into what you do now, because a lot of our listeners are building agencies or teams, I would love to hear a little bit about how you grew your agency, because I know that you had an agency for 20 years and you recently sold it and you had a team of 10. So can you just speak a little bit about kind of what that journey was, starting that business, growing that business, any tips for people in terms of what that could look like for them, how they can leverage some of that experience and for themselves?
Oh, wow. That could be a whole hour conversation.
It really could be. I know. Just the highlight reel.
The highlight reel. I left corporate because I was very fed up. I was good at building high performance teams and fixing broken organizations. And so I kept coming up with these ideas and people would sort of pat me on the head and tell me to go sit in the corner. And I finally thought, you know what, this is not what I want to do. I get it. I've got a VP title. You're paying me all this money, but you're not really letting me do what I want to do. I started my own company. Originally, I wasn't going to have employees. And then I discovered that my personality, I like to control the process, and hiring freelancers did not give me the kind of control that I wanted. So I ultimately built a team where I could put together a process that worked. The mistakes that I made along the way are the best lessons. The first one is I kept trying to straddle the fence. I wanted to do marketing and I wanted to do team building for bigger companies. And it was a complete mess because every time I would go networking, someone would ask me what I would do. And I would sort of blather on about both things. And I wanted to be sure that people knew everything I could do. And nobody knew what I did. And one day I called a friend of mine who was doing a team building business. And I said, I've got a present for you. And I sent her probably 500 contacts of people that were in my Rolodex that I was trying to build that side of my business with. I said, they're yours. I don't want them. I burned the boat. I got onto the island and said, I'm going to live in the small business marketing world. And as soon as I did that, everything got clear. Everybody knew what I did. Everybody knew what we were about. And so it was scary, but that was totally the right thing to do. We lived a little bit on the bleeding edge. Every time a new technology would come out, a new platform, we would try it. We never jumped in 100%. Because there were a lot of things that came and went over the years. Remember Foursquare? Not too many people do. There were a lot of those kind of things, but there were a few things that really did take hold. And so by being willing to try them and see how they fit, and our rule was always, yes, it's interesting, but is there a business application? Do our small business clients need it? And so we kicked the tires on a lot of software, a lot of products. The rule there was always, if something came in, something had to go out. And this is where I think a lot of business owners make mistakes. They don't evaluate that tech stack. And one day they wake up and realize they're spending $5,000 a month in software. And so you really need to be hardcore. You need to know when your software renews. And you need to be evaluating and asking yourself, am I really using this product? And is there something better out there? And I guess the last thing is, I started talking to people about selling the company 6 years before I sold it. I wasn't really ready to sell, but having those conversations helped me figure out how I could restructure the company so it would have the maximum value when I was ready to do that. Getting my processes cleaned up, getting everything documented, getting systems in place that allowed the business to run without me, making sure that my two key employees were happy, well-paid, and they owned the relationships with the customers.
So
that when I got ready to leave, they were like, well, when you step out, what will happen to the customers? I'm like, well, on the content side, Sam's got them. On the website, Simon's got them. You don't need me. And then
that's also a really important point too, like around profitability and recurring revenue. And like, we at one point inquired about selling our company before we restructured. And yeah, they were all questions I hadn't thought about because I hadn't thought about it through that lens. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a really important point. And I know that you kind of don't start a business thinking you're going to sell it, but we should be thinking about what's the end result. Do we want to build this thing that we then just shut down? Or do we want to build this thing that we can sell for three times what we make in a year? So, you know, ballpark figure, but like,
yeah,
it's really great. And you're right, have a more efficient kind of profitable business by thinking about it that way, even if you never sell. So yeah, thanks for talking about that.
Yep. And the very last thing on the sales journey was figuring out what I loved best about my business. And I loved the podcast and I loved the teaching. And so before I got serious about selling, I formed a separate company. And I moved those resources into a separate business. So when I sold my core company, I didn't sell my intellectual property.
Oh, Lorraine, so smart. I love it. I love speaking to women who are great about what they do. Oh, so good. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, thank you so much. That's like the golden nuggets, right? So thank you for for sharing that with us. So let's dive into your area of expertise and what it is that you teach your clients now. And I know that a lot of that has to do with, how different ways of getting traffic and then selling while you sleep. So I'd like to dive into both of those topics. Because Chat GPT and AI in general is kind of overtaking the content world now, and people are really, they've realized it's easily accessible in the last few months. Lots of people have been jumping on to that. So let's talk about SEO, because I think there's a lot of confusion about that now around keywords and kind of good SEO and bad SEO, and just a lot of, I'd love if you can shed some clarity, some light on how we can use content-based SEO as a service provider, or a service-based business. What's the best way to the top of the mountain or page one?
So everybody obsesses about, I need to be on page one for this particular keyword. But when you look at the data from Google, what you see is that used to be half, it might still be about a third of all of the searches that happened today are new. They've never happened before exactly that way. You go back 25 years when I would do a search in a search engine, I was using Boolean technology, furnace plus repair. You know, furnace repair in quotes, telling the search engine that that's what I was looking for. And so that's where our obsession with keywords began. But search engines are so much smarter than that now. They respond to natural language. Hey Siri, why does my furnace smell funny? What's wrong with my ignition? Why does it make that grinding sound? These natural language, these natural questions, because we're using more voice-activated devices, we're talking to our phone, we're talking to Alexa, even when we type into a search engine, we're typing in longer questions. Well, there's a keyword in there somewhere. But if you can answer the question, you win. People don't go to search engines for the fun of it. It's not something I do on Saturday afternoon when I got nothing to do. Oh, I know, I'll do a Google search. Oh, I'm going to Google because my husband and I are planning a trip to Louisville, Kentucky to do the Bourbon Trail. And I want to know which distilleries are on the Bourbon Trail. And so that's what I typed in. I have questions. And then I get a list of responses. And you know what? I see where somebody has specifically answered my question. And what do? I click on it. And that's gold, because now you have somebody coming to your website who really wants to know exactly what you want to tell them. And so figuring out the questions, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but figuring out the questions and writing good answers and writing comprehensive answers and, sorry, ChatGPT, original answers will float you to the top of search. You won't get every search. Doesn't matter. You will get the searches for people that are really interested in that topic. I'm going to use a couple of consumer product examples, but you can see how this would work. Well, so the first one that I know we did, we had a flooring company. And one of the things that they always got asked on a sales call was, why do I have to replace the subfloor? Well, we went to their website. They didn't have the answer to that question anywhere. So we wrote a blog post. Why do I need to replace my subfloor when I get new flooring? That blog post got traffic every week. Every single week, people were coming to their website. A heating and air conditioning contractor, how does a whole house humidifier work? We worked with a bean company. What's the difference between a cannellini and a navy bean? But you can do the same thing with bankruptcy law. You know, how do I know if I'm ready to talk to a bankruptcy attorney? What are three things I should do before I talk to a bankruptcy attorney? Do I need an accountant or a bookkeeper? If I'm a coach, should I hire a coach or a consultant? Or coach and consultant, what's the difference? Mm. you know that you have questions in your business. You get asked them all the time. Start making a list of all the questions that come up in your sales conversation. Then go to your website and search for that question. Does an answer come up? If not, guess what you need to do? You need to write a blog post or add that information to an FAQ page or add it to your homepage if it's really important. Not sure what questions to ask? The answers are hiding in plain sight. If you go to Google and you start to type in a question, and you do it slowly, you know what happens? It starts to autofill the question. And then it suggests other related questions. You ask this, people also ask. And there's five more questions. And then you click one of those, and people also ask. And so you can go to Google with one question and come back to your business with 25.
Yeah, great tips.
And so that works for every business, because every business has questions.
Yeah, and you know what they are. Like, you know, how much does this cost? We work with a lot of home builders in our agency, and it's like, how much does this cost to build a house here? Like, there's lots of, you already know, you have a great place to start because you know the questions Absolutely. That you're getting asked. Yeah.
And I, in larger organizations, I tell them to talk to their, whoever answers the phone, if they have a customer service line, if they have salespeople, have them keep that running list. That content has fabulous attractiveness from an SEO perspective, and it is also a powerful sales tool on the back end. We're in a conversation. Maybe you didn't ask about that on the front end, but during the conversation, you're like, you know, how long is it going to take to build the house once we sign the contract? Well, funny you should ask. I have this great article that outlines how long everything takes and where the process could break down. I'll send you that after the call. Or you don't even say it to them, but then after the sales call, you have an automated email, a series of emails that you send, and one of them links to the articles that answer the questions they're most likely to have.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about AI? And you mentioned that, you know, original content is going to beat, you know, the ChatGPT answers. Can you talk a little bit more about that? And because I know that lots of content creators do have this love-hate relationship with it. They're going, oh my gosh, it's saving me so much time. But I know that the better this gets, the less I'm going to be needed. So yeah, can you talk to me a bit more about your perspective on AI and where that's going and how that might actually change SEO and maybe algorithms and things like that?
So one of the challenges, okay, so there is a place for AI. I'm going to get there. I'm going to tell you the challenges first, and then we'll talk about how you use it and balance some of the challenges. One of the things about AI, the only thing it can do, it is not a sentient being. It's not thinking. It is literally just collecting data, synthesizing, summarizing, and giving you, based on word cues, feedback. And so all that AI can do is repurpose what's already out there. So if you're trying to write content that is going to perform well for search, and you are competing with millions of other articles, and you are relying on something that's doing nothing but synthesizing what's already out there, why should Google put your synthesized article ahead of the 50 other synthesized articles that sound exactly the same? So that's the trap that you get into. Now, on the one hand, you can write completely original. On the other, you know, on the other side, you have complete AI. I think the smart place is in the middle. I think you go to ChatGPT and say, what are the most common questions consumers have when they're buying this? Boom, 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 boom. Okay. Write an article. You know, what key points should I hit in my article about this? And it'll write it. Use that outline. Use that as an outline and then lay your personality on top of it. If your article reads like a textbook, ain't nobody wants to read it. But if your article includes examples, like you talk about the fact and kind of like the conversation, you know, where I was giving you examples of companies that actually did this, you know, go to Google and find your questions. Here's how a flooring company did it. Here's how my builder does it. Here's how those nuggets, those little pieces of content only you can create is what makes your article interesting to human beings and to search engines. Because now you're breaking that cycle. You're pulling some content from what's already out there, but you're overlaying it with original content that is unique to you. And I think that's the balance point.
Yeah. And I think that is, because it can be really tempting to go, oh my gosh, I was, you know, spending X amount of time writing a blog post and now I can spend 2 minutes and get paid the same amount. And you know, so I love that you highlighted that and that's like the answer to everything, really, is somewhere in the middle, right? We're very rarely black and white on things. And thank you for giving some concrete examples about how we can actually do that. And you're right, because SEO also, Google is going to keep pages at the top that people spend time on. If people go there, read two paragraphs and go, oh, like, boring, and they bounce after 10 seconds, Google's going to stop recommending that article because it's not actually, they know it's not valuable to people. So really great points. Thank you.
I want to give you one more point with that. Before ChatGPT, and I don't know if where you are, but here in the US, there are a few big law firm marketing companies, and the lawyers hire them and they write blog posts. And for the most part, the blog content is written by the most junior content writer, barely a year out of college. And the articles are very simplistic, and I've seen enough of them, and I can go to any law firm website and go, oh, I know who they're using. The problem with that is, yes, you can do that for your clients, but one day they're going to wake up, or you can do it for yourself. But at the end of the day, that content represents you. Do you want to sound like you're still in freshman English class? If you're an attorney and I'm going to hire you to write legal briefs for me, do you want to sound superficial and repetitive if what I really want is ultimately to be hired to do public speaking, to do training, to do coaching? And it sounds like I haven't had an original thought in 20 years. Your words matter.
Yeah, words do matter. And I think it's just another example of how we can focus on the short-term win and then sacrifice, therefore, the long-term gain. And it's just like anything in business, right? The quick and dirty answer is probably not the best one. Like, yeah, it'll get you the quick win, but it'll probably come back to bite you at some point. And what are we building? Are we building a business that's going to last 2 years, or are we building something that we want to sell or that we want to keep doing and we want to evolve and, you know, move into more of that IP like you mentioned? So all really great points. Thank you for speaking into that for us. And so let's talk about why we do that in the first place, because we want traffic, but we don't really want traffic. Like, traffic is great, but it's not going to change our bank account in any way. So talk to me about how we can, in our content, then begin to move to that process and move people down the buyer journey with our content.
So if people come to your website because they have questions and all you do is give them a paragraph or two, they read it, and then they bounce, they're happy. They got what they needed and you got nothing. Now, if all you're doing is promoting on social media, that's unfortunate. But if you're paying for ads to bring people and they bounce and you get nothing, you're wasting a lot of money. And so you need to look at every page on your website as if it was, the analogy I use is, people used to think of your homepage as the door into your home. But these days, if you look at your web analytics, the vast majority of traffic to your website is coming in on other pages. And so you need to treat every page of your website like a landing page. People come, you got to give them what they came for, and you got to give them more. You've got to have something for them to do that keeps them on the website, that encourages them to give you their email address. That might be a quiz. It might be a guide. It might be a workbook. It might be a video or a podcast. But you got to have something there that encourages them to stay. It's like those, of course, nobody watches television anymore, but you used to watch television late at night. There were these commercials and they would be selling you knives. And they would talk about all the different knives. And then when you got to the end, right when you thought the commercial was over, they'd be like, and wait, there's more. And if you'd stay, then they would tell you about the cleaning products for the knives. And then you'd get all the way down through that. You need to do that on your website. So when I get to the bottom of a page, every page on your website must have either a conversion form, a contact form, an offer, or a button that tells me what I do next. Because people come to their website and they don't know. Well, they just go back up to the navigation and find, no, they're not going to. You got them here. Don't let them go. There should always be that, wait, there's more. If you like this. Here's another blog post. Here's a testimonial. Here's a chance to do an audit. And for coaches and consultants, human beings love to score themselves against other people. They want to know how they stack up. So create a quiz. And then in order to get the answer, or they get a score, you scored 10 out of 15. What does that mean? Give us your email address and we'll send you the workbook so you can see. Well, that's a win-win because number one, you get their email address so you can send follow-up campaigns, they get what they want, and you learn something about them. I used to do a web audit, and people would score their websites. When I get those audits, I'd go through it, and I could pick up the telephone and say, hey, I noticed you filled your web audit. I noticed you didn't score yourself really well here and here. Would you like to talk about how to improve your website to fix that? I knew what their pain points were. They told me.
I love it. So good. And if you're a coach, I've done incentives in the past as well, where I've looked at like, what is the key metric for you? So that might be like, how much are you earning or something like that. And if they're earning $1,000 a month in their, you know, as a coach, then you know that you can serve them in a certain way. And if they're earning $10,000 a month as a coach or whatever, that you can serve them in a certain way. So yeah, that's a really great point. What do you use for quiz software, or what would you recommend now? Do you do that at the moment or no?
So we used Gravity Forms on all of our websites. Oh, and yes. So we actually built our quizzes using Gravity Forms. There are a lot of other quiz products that are less complicated and do work really well. What I would look at as you're evaluating, kind of figuring out what's right for you, what are you going to do when someone fills this out? Do you want to automatically drop them into an email list so they get a drip campaign? Well, then your software needs to do that. Do you want them to get their score immediately, but get additional info later? Then your software needs to handle that. Do you want the quiz to be fun, serious? Look at, some quiz tools use graphics really well. Mm-hmm. If you're in a visual business, that's great. If you're in a more serious business, a straightforward quiz is more important. How easy is it to integrate with your website? Depending on, if you have a Squarespace or a WordPress website, is it going to fit inside my website? I hate tools that are standalone. I hate tools that live on somebody else's server, because what you're doing is you're bringing people to your website and then you're sending them away. Yes, they're still interacting with you, but not according to Google. According to Google, they're now interacting with the company with that is.
Yeah, good point.
Quiz. So figure out what you're trying to do. There used to be some really nice tools on Facebook, and I think Facebook has kind of changed that up completely, which is something that we weren't going to talk about, but I'm going to say, I don't care what social platform you're on, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, no matter how much conversation you have there, your marketing begins and ends on your website, because any of those platforms can change their rules or go away tomorrow.
Totally. Or make you go away. I lost a couple of years ago. Yeah, a couple of years ago now. 5,000 Instagram followers in a second. My account, I was scrolling and it signed me out. And then it never let me, let me appeal it, but they never responded to my appeal. I was like, okay, starting again then, I guess. Luckily that wasn't my focus, right? Like Instagram followers weren't my focus, but still all of those conversations, all the relationships I'd built, so now I'm definitely more mindful, and like I always was. Email was always primary, but for a lot of people it's not. And if you've got 50,000 followers, so yes, definitely.
Yes, I'll go away. And a lot of companies invested a lot of money in Facebook, and Facebook ads are not performing as well as they used to. They're just not. And so you can throw more money at it, but you're not going to get the same kind of results that you got 2 years ago. It's a new world. It's a whole new rodeo.
It is. Yeah. That's a lot of, there is a lot of changes. Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit more about email marketing, because we've talked about having a download and getting people on our list, which is like that next step in that buyer journey, right? We've got them aware of us. We're getting them to consider something because they've exchanged their email address. They've given us some real estate in their inbox, which is a pretty big deal these days with so many things, so many emails that we get. How can we make our emails stand out? I know that you talk about not all words being equal and there being ways to show more emotion in our language, in our emails. Can you talk a bit about that?
So there are so many things that you can do to adjust your subject lines. And that's really the first place this starts, because if your subject line bores me, I don't care how good your email is, I'm never going to see it. And so you have about 7 words, and you should spend as much time working on that subject line as you did the entire newsletter, because that's how important it is. And you want to make sure that you don't waste the first 3 words. Weekly update from, what the heck? I know it's a weekly update. It shows up in my inbox every week. I know it's from you because your name is there. You have now wasted the first three words. Don't do that. There are a lot of techniques. You can start with a question. I had somebody tell me recently that we are questioned out. So instead of how do I or how do you, using language that says here's how. By starting with a statement, the question is implied, but you give me the reassurance that I'm going to get the answer. So I like the what I call the inverted question.
Mm-hmm.
I also love going negative. People are funny. If they are at dead neutral, they may extend a little bit of energy for something they want. They will extend or expend a lot of energy to get away from something that's causing them pain. So negative headlines tap into that fear. One of my most successful headlines for my company was "Why People Hate Your Website." Wait, what do you mean people hate my website? I had one that was for a carpet cleaning business, how to ruin your carpet in three easy steps. Why did you say that? I just did one. It was a video. And the video opens with the first screen that says, "Don't watch this video." My viewership was great on that video. People, they like, you know, they get curious. Shock and awe, surprise. Some of those really edgy headlines, you have to be careful and you have to really know your brand. I would not encourage an attorney to take the same liberties that I took with my marketing. My brand was a little in your face. We were known to be a little playful. Occasionally, there was language that might make some people uncomfortable, but the reality was, if you walked into my office on any given day, you might be likely to hear, and if that made you uncomfortable, you weren't going to be a good client for us anyway. So yeah, we could be a little bit edgy in our headlines. Cocaine marketing, it takes more to get high. We weren't talking about selling drugs. We were talking about the addictiveness of finding something that works and spending more and spending more and spending more to keep chasing that marketing high.
Mm-hmm.
I got a few emails from people who were really offended. And I'm like, okay, I appreciate that. Now, I would never do that for some of my clients who had more traditional brands.
Yeah, it is important to know your voice. You're right. And yeah, depending how polarizing you want to be, using, you know, always and never versus may and might, but people will remember the polarizing. If you know, if we always blend in, if we're always in the middle, if we're always, you know, beige, then how is it that we're standing out? You know, is it just our personality? Is it our value? Like, so do really question it and think about what hill you are willing to stand on and wave the flag for and be opinionated about and different, because those are the things, you're right, they're the ones that they're going to go, hang on, what is it? But make sure your headline like relates to your email, please. I hate getting one like, you know, I don't know, something random that's like, this has nothing, you're annoying me now.
Your email has to deliver on whatever your headline promises.
Yeah.
I did have some edgy headlines, and then you opened it up and then I explained the connection very quickly and then go on to what I'm doing. Those work well, but if you just have these random clickbaity headlines, people opt out. They just, I don't even care. I don't want to follow.
Yeah.
It's really about trying to get people to stop. I mean, that's the thing. There's a sea of headlines. There's that text floating by. You got to do something that makes someone stop long enough to read 6 words. You know, in your inbox, after 6 words, it gets truncated anyway. That's all you can see on your phone. So those 5 or 6 words really got to sell it.
Yeah. Yeah, super important. And that's going to influence how many people actually open the email. So especially with your kind of drip campaign or your welcome sequence, make sure that those are, because often that's about us. And so we can be really, I think we can kind of forget about the subject line and make it all about us. So especially with that, as people are coming into your world, please spend lots of time on those headlines. And then go back and look at the data. Go, oh, are enough people opening my emails, and be okay to change just the subject line, or just, I think this is somewhere where things people get stuck. They've got a PDF download or a video or something, and they think that because it didn't get the results they wanted, they need to change the whole thing. You probably don't. You probably just need to change the title and play. It's the same thing. It's the same content. I've been running the same webinar for like 4 years, but I changed the title all the time to test it. It's the same content.
You change the title, you change the graphic.
Yeah.
You look different. There was a period there where Pinterest was really doing well for me. It's not, it goes up and it goes down. But there was a while I was following a lot of coaches. And what I realized was the ones that were really doing well, I'm like, wait a minute, I just saw that. And I'll scroll through their feed. Oh, they changed the color. Oh, they have a different background, but it's the same, or 5 or 6 different ways to tell what they're selling. And yeah, they just rotate them through so it feels fresh.
Yeah. And we forget, right? Because we see thousands and thousands of pieces of content every day. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we forget. And we need to be told more than once anyway.
Oh, yes. I forget how many times the rule when I first started in marketing, it was like 5 to 7 repetitions, but we have so many more messages coming at us now that I don't even notice you at 10. You know, maybe we get to 25 and I'm like, oh yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now I think a lot of the number that I'm kind of using in my head, whether it's accurate or not, because I haven't looked at the latest stats, is 20. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to talk about something, if I'm going to sell something, I need to, if I haven't sold it 20 times, I haven't talked about it 20 times in different capacities, I probably haven't done it justice. I'm probably wasting my time. So, you know, whether you want to kind of work off that for yourselves, listeners, or kind of just think about that as like, oh, whoa, you know, and yes, it feels repetitive. Yes, it feels boring. Yes, you feel like everyone's kind of packed up and gone home. But keep, when we're selling, we have to talk about it multiple times. And I know you talk, you help people with their email marketing and selling via email. We're coming up to the end of our time. Are there a couple of pointers or a couple of encouragements about how people can think about using email to sell if they haven't really thought about that in the past?
I think that a lot of people understand the welcome sequence. I don't know that they do as good a job in the sales sequence. One of my favorite campaigns, had a sales conversation with somebody, I had a series of 4 emails that would go maybe about every 4 days. And it was specifically only if we talked about web design. And the first email was, you know, hey, I really enjoyed our conversation. We mentioned WordPress. Here's some more information about WordPress. Hey, as you're thinking about your web design, the second email might be, here's a link to some information on hot new web trends. We'd love to talk to you about how they could apply to your business. The third one, you know, might be examples or testimonials. And then the last one is, look, you may or may not be ready to work with us, but here's our workbook. Go ahead and answer all these questions and feel free to take it with you to whoever you ultimately hire to do your website. We, you know, they'd fill it out. And if they got that far and they downloaded and they filled it out, I was having a phone conversation. And what I liked about that campaign and what really worked well is they were simple, they were short, there was one link. There, no formatting, no big headline, no footer. It looked like I had just dashed it off and just sent it. I would get lots and lots of emails from people who were getting that email and responding, going, "Hey, I know I owed you a phone call. Can we talk?" And, "Oh, I just got your latest email." And I'm like, oh, yeah. And you know, the other thing that I liked about it is I could jump in and see who was in my pipeline, who was opening my emails, who really didn't care, you know, and use that to make the most of my sales time. So email newsletters are great. Drip campaigns for individual products are wonderful. Don't forget the value of email as part of your closing tools after the sale.
Yeah, I think a lot of us do drop the ball after that sales conversation because we feel like, well, if they want to work with us, they will. But people are busy. And I think we're the ones that often ghost them if, you know, rather than the other way around. And just the fortune is in the follow-up. I will say it like 1,000 times. Follow up and follow up and follow up until they tell you no.
And you know, you can start to space it out a little bit more. Totally. You know, I feel stalking you, you know, and ask them, am I following up too, you know, am I calling too often? And you know, let people opt out, let people tell you no.
Totally.
It frees you up to work on the next opportunity.
Yeah, I remember one person I followed up for about 2 years and then they were a client for 2 years. But it would be slow and, you know, it would be like 3 months in between and just checking in, where are you at? I know you were busy, or I know you went on holidays, or I know you had a baby, you know, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, okay, I'll follow up and I'll follow up in a couple of months. Yep, follow up in a couple of months. Okay, great. And so we continued that. And then, yeah, they become a client for, you know, and paid us tens of thousands of dollars over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like it is worth it if you're doing it in a way that is serving and, yeah, not bucking the heck out of them.
Absolutely.
So is there anything else that you think that we need to fill in as we close? Lorraine, is there anything that we kind of skipped over too quickly or anything else you want to say on what we talked about?
I think that you need to test your marketing. And this is all of it. With email, you know, we talked about changing the headline if it doesn't work. A lot of email marketing tools will allow you to run the same campaign with two different headlines and then compare the results. Take advantage of that testing. Take advantage of testing day of the week, time of day. Pay attention to your social media posts and do the same thing. Spend a month really looking at which posts get interaction, which posts don't. What is my audience reacting to? And let the data help you get better.
Yeah. Yeah. We're too impatient and we skip over it too fast. And then I think we throw the whole thing in the bin and start again when you're like, probably just needed a tweak.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. How can people find you? Actually, I know that you have a resource. We talked about using powerful language, emotive language. I know you have the Power Words workbook that can help people provides. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And we'll pop the link in the show notes.
So that is actually part of our entire content-based SEO course. And it is one of the steps that you really need to go through to think about the words that you're using. And there are words that will tickle the emotion, make people a little afraid, pique their curiosity. And this workbook really kind of goes through and helps you get better at your language. I definitely would encourage people to check it out and to do that. And then I'm going to say that the best place to find me is on LinkedIn. Connect on LinkedIn. I share a lot of content. And you can see some of the previews of some of my podcasts if that's of interest to you, or what I'm working on or writing or downloading or doing. But LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Lorraine. I've really appreciated speaking with you and learning from your experience and hearing your perspective. And I know that our listeners will really value everything that we talked about. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Two things before you go. If you have loved this episode, please grab your phone to subscribe and review the show. And if you are ready to make a power move in your business, book a free strategy call with me, and you will walk away with a 3-step action plan and a new fire in your belly. Book your call at annalisewarn.com/consult. The link is in the show notes. Have a fabulous week.